First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, where you can find previous episodes on podcast. Every show we do is put up there. Any investigations we've got going on or any breaking news, we will put there. And for you guys that go to LouisvillePolitics.com, make sure you join our RSS feed or our email newsletter, and we'll make sure everything that we do gets delivered directly to your inbox. Yes, this is the 21st century, right? In the meantime, for you guys, first time listening to the show, call-in numbers, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you folks in the listening queue, make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you on air as soon as possible. And if you just don't feel like talking but you still want to rant and rave, well, join our live chat. You can go in there and you can sign in using your Facebook account, your Twitter account, whatever you want to. So there's all kinds of options to intertwine with this show, as always. And I tell you, Ed Martin is running a little bit late, apparently. He's busy running that business that Barack Obama built for him. So sometimes on Tuesday nights he gets here just a tad bit late. But I tell you, I want to start with a story tonight, a local story. Come out of the Courier Journal today, there was a man fatally shot Tuesday afternoon in the Louisville-Russell neighborhood. Now, why do I think this? I mean, we have shootings every day in this town, right? So why is this one in particular? Well, it's important because if we remember, we've been following a story for the last couple of months that started with a riot on March the 22nd here in Louisville with 200 black teen gang members. Basically going on a violent spree and destroying property, beating people up, that kind of thing. Anyway, what was real important was the aftermath. And I tell you why, because, you know, we had the community starting to get involved. We actually had some young black teenagers that were going on record saying that they need something to do, that they have to have something. The only thing they know is violence, because when you're violent, it makes people notice you and get you some kind of return. And what's interesting here is this shooting happened at Beecher Terrace. And the reason I wanted to bring this up early and just spend a minute on it was because one of the areas that was cited by 16-year-old Jaywan Taylor in the article in the aftermath of all of this was that, you know, Greg Fisher, our illustrious mayor, decided he wanted to put a bunch of East End white guys together in suits and ties on a Sunday afternoon to walk across a bridge and act like everything was okay. Obviously, clearly he has no clue about the African-American community in his town. And that's what Taylor was telling us. He told us, you know, that, you know, come to Beecher Terrace, come to these different places, and you'll know, because you don't know where we live, you don't know what we have to put up with. This shooting was at Beecher Terrace, except this one got reported. There's always trouble at Beecher Terrace. It is a crime zone, but nobody will ever speak up or do anything about it. This story got reported by the Courier-Journal, of all people, because they usually help hide everything. You know, this guy was apparently shot 9 or 10 times. You know, this is just exactly what we're talking about. A bunch of rich white people wearing ties walking through, you know, downtown waterfront, acting like they care about West End violence, know anything about the poor neighborhoods, or it's primarily the poor black, you know, kids and everything else today. You know, this is a good example of that. Why didn't they go to Beecher Terrace? Because they were scared they were going to get shot. So, I wanted to point that story out. Normally, I don't spend a lot of time on those type of stories, but I just wanted to bring that into play just because of all the West End violence that doesn't get reported. You know, we have a fatal shooting that just happened at Beecher Terrace, which was cited by one of the kids that were willing to go on record to talk about the violence and why we have this teenage gang violence. So I thought it was an interesting paradox. I wanted to share that with you guys. In the meantime, we really do have news here. You know, business news, political news, things like that. Very interesting story. I have to apologize to our regular listeners. Yes, I do. I know it seems I do that a lot, right? But apparently, Bob Hellringer ran a column chastising and really hitting the only announced gubernatorial candidate so far in Hal Heiner. He did that at the beginning of April. Hal Heiner actually responded the first week of April, and it was printed in its entirety in the Courier-Journal. But I found it interesting because Bob Hellringer is a front man for the liberal agenda. You know, he gets involved in the liberal agenda and helps, you know, the Courier-Journal and everybody else push it. Why would you pick on Hal Heiner and have a political hit piece? This election isn't going to be till next year, November 2015. Hal Heiner is the only one who has announced a run for governor. He is on record as announcing he's going to run for governor of Kentucky. Oh, by the way, he happens to be a Republican. But it was very, very interesting that Bob Hellringer, who is leading this pro-casino lobbying group and everything else, started trying to act like he knew what Hal Heiner's position was on expanded gaming. And then today, if you want to kind of bring the whole picture together, you know, Bob Hellringer was going nuts on Hal Heiner because he thought he knew what his position was on expanded gaming, and I'll tell you what that is in a second. And then you have Bill Lamb, everybody's favorite, you know, liberal in disguise, general manager of WGRB-TV, decided he was going to do a point of view segment chastising the state for not agreeing to casino gambling. So, you know, but Bob Hellringer didn't say anything about Bill Lamb because Bill Lamb was on his side with casino gambling. And to be quite honest with you, there's a lot of people on the side of casino gambling. But I want to make it real clear here, since Hal hasn't really gotten a chance to really even do much other than campaign. I mean, this guy is on the road constantly already. It's phenomenal how early he hit the gate and how hard he's out there working to try to get elected as governor. But Hellringer didn't even do his own damn research. For one, he never called Hal Heiner to ask him what his position was on any issue that he chastised him for. So if he would have done that, then maybe he would have had a clearer picture on what he was running his mouth about. But Hal's position on expanding gaming in Kentucky has never changed. He's never wavered. You know, he believes that Frankfort has spent a heck of a lot of significant time focusing on the casinos rather than making Kentucky a more hospitable economic climate. We can all agree on that. here in Kentucky, especially in Frankfort, these morons, and they are morons, all of them, bar none, Republican, Democrat, you name it, they don't care. It's all about them and their power and their egos. They don't care about the people of Kentucky. None of them do. But it's fascinating because, you know, they do waste so much time going back and forth on this stupid stuff, you know, that they really haven't done a lot of work on anything else. That's why we continue having special sessions. Well, if Bob Hellringer would have done his job, then he would have realized that Hal Heiner has long said that if the legislature would pass a constitutional amendment to put this on the ballot, he would have no problem whatsoever allowing the people to vote on it. That's democracy, folks. But the likes of Bob Hellringer and the Courier-Journal and the likes of Bill Lamb and these other guys don't get that. Don't get that. You know, so this is the thing. Those are the kind of things that's already happening out there. I missed that story earlier this month. I apologize. And I was going through, kind of checking up on Hal Heiner earlier today just to see how his campaign was going. And I ran across these stories, and I'm like, what in the world is going on? This guy's being attacked for something he believes in. He says if the legislature passes something to put it on the ballot for the people to decide, he wouldn't stand in the way. Let the people vote. Isn't that what we always ask for? Let us have our voice. Hal Heiner has not said he was going to stop casino gambling if given the opportunity. Bob Hellringer is a fool who has a singular objective. That's just the way it is. The objective is to get casinos in here and make sure that the daggone horse tracks get all the revenue. We've already addressed this countless times. I even wrote a bill for them a couple of years ago for Frankfurt to get it passed. Didn't happen. We don't even need it on a ballot. Believe it or not. We do not have to take casino gambling and put it on the ballot and let the people decide. The Legislative Research Commission even agrees. This is what I was working on 3 years ago. All you have to do is change some simple language in the existing law. The legislature has the authority to do that, but they don't want to take responsibility for it. That's the situation. You want casino gambling in Kentucky? You've got it. It's already here. Name one Catholic church that you go through that doesn't have what's called a Monte Carlo night. A Monte Carlo night is full gambling, folks. Blackjack, roulette, craps, poker, you name it, it's there. You think we don't have slot machines in Kentucky? Think again. There's not one bingo that goes on in this town that doesn't use pull tabs. Pull tabs are nothing more than paper slot machines. That's it. You pull the tab back, you match three cherries, you win a prize. It's no different than pulling the lever on a mechanical slot machine and winning a prize. So, yeah, you know, that's the whole absurdity of the argument, as simple as I can make it. Now, the language that we have in the law today, according to the legislation, the language today says that these Monte Carlo nights can be approved for up to 96 hours four times a year for charitable purposes. So the Catholic Church, or really, I mean, anybody that wants to run a Monte Carlo, can have four Monte Carlo events each year up to 4 days per session. 16 days a year, any charity that wants to can run a Monte Carlo night free and clear without having to worry about the state, without having to worry about breaking the law. So all you've got to do is change the language. I wrote that bill, and it didn't matter. These guys want to make damn sure they're not worried about getting casinos in here. They want to make sure that they can manipulate the market and make sure that the horse industry is the only one that benefits from this, and that includes Churchill Downs because people like Bob Hellringer are putting cash in the pockets of people like Larry Clark. And, yes, I know that's a bold statement. Larry Clark, you can sue me if you want to, but in my opinion, that's what happens. And, by the way, if you decide to go down that road, you may not like the proof I bring to the table. But that's the truth of it. And then you've got Bill Lamb out there tonight trying to defend Churchill Downs. Churchill Downs is a business. Everybody's giving them grief about this sign, but the real grief should be because Kentucky won't allow expanded gaming and casino gambling so Churchill Downs can make real money. Bill Lamb, shut up. Really, seriously, please, shut up. We know that your head is so far up the butt of your BFF, Jim King, and the other Democrats in this town accordingly that you think all of a sudden you've got some kind of relevance. You gave up your relevance when you became a hypocrite on your stances through the years. You gave up the relevance when you decided you were going to cower and bow down to the political powers that be. Everybody in this town knows that. Nobody cares about your point of view anymore. And it's sad, really, because at one time I was a big fan of Bill Lamb. Actually, Bill Lamb stood up for me in 2006 when I decided to run for mayor, tell the whole world that I had a right to be heard. Only just a few short years later to tell the whole world that Jackie Green, who had the balls to stand up and run for mayor, didn't have a right to be heard. That's hypocrisy. Why is it that one person has a right to be heard and the other person doesn't when it comes to the media? And that's my problem with Bill Lamb these days, because we're seeing more and more of that. I don't know why, but Bill Lamb at one time I had a lot of great respect for, and anymore I have to start questioning his values, his beliefs, and his integrity. And standing up for Churchill Downs and this casino gambling plan, this is all nothing more of what I've been fighting for years with the Keep organization, the governor of this state, Beshear, the House of the Senate, our Kentucky Congress, and every other fool who thinks they know what they're doing and don't have a clue. None of these guys know, because they don't care. So, you know, I thought those were interesting. It's something to bring up. But Hal Heiner, I was really shocked to see that Hal Heiner is already getting nailed, or they're already trying to attack him. They must really consider him a serious threat, which is kind of funny since Hal Heiner is from right here in Louisville, and Louisville typically doesn't get any play throughout the state for any kind of state-held offices like governor. So Hal Heiner may be a good bet to make, folks, if you're into betting. Because if they've got to attack him this early based on lies and propaganda, you know, and there's nobody else even announced yet because we're still, a year and a half away, you know, it's got to make you ask questions. In the meantime, we have other news here. When you talk about what's wrong with this state, we continually talk about Louisville being the fourth highest taxed city in America. We continue talking about Kentucky being in the top five of the highest taxed states in America. And we have blowhards like Steve Beshear out there acting like they're doing something for us. It's really disturbing because we have an announcement now. Toyota has announced that it's going to close their engineering and manufacturing North America headquarters and move those jobs to Texas. You betcha. They're going to Plano, Texas. Why? Because Governor Rick Perry in Texas, a Republican, I might add, announced to the whole world that Texas is open for business. They're not beating the business to death and forcing them to pay exorbitant amounts of money and taxes to come there. No. They're allowing these businesses to come there, grow and prosper, and add employee jobs. They're letting the market do the job it's supposed to do. They're not forcing these businesses out of business because they have to charge them too much to be there. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Although this is only the engineering and manufacturing headquarters, we do still have a plant in Georgetown, Kentucky. The Toyota plant is still going to produce the Camry there and the other things that they do for now. For now. Once you move your headquarters out of a place, you're telling the whole world you no longer have you no longer have that commitment. You no longer believe in the place that you're doing business. So you move your headquarters as groundwork, basically, in a lot of cases, to set up your business elsewhere because it's more conducive to making profits. That's business life. You have an exception to the rule every now and then. Let's look at UPS. UPS's headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. UPS built their business here. Why? Because they're in the business of moving packages and traveling and things like that. We've got the Ohio River, so you can travel by boat. We've got the airport, you can travel by air. You know, we've also got the trains. Everything runs right here, and we're the central hub for the shipping corridor here in Louisville. So, you know, UPS made sense to keep their business here, but they never moved their headquarters out of Atlanta. Toyota moved theirs out of Kentucky for a reason. Let's go to the phones. Hello, Mr. Paul. How are you, sir?
Hi, Ed. Are you soloing it tonight?
Actually, Martin's running late. I don't know if he's going to join us at all. He has some late business tonight, but go ahead.
Okay. Hey, listen, I wanted to clarify a point that you just stated.
Okay.
Obama built UPS. You know, let's get that straight. Nobody builds their own business. Obama and the government built UPS. Okay, now that we've got that understood, you always punch a button when you bring up Churchill Downs and their failure to be a good corporate steward. Churchill Downs has come under fire for this multi-million dollar video board. And the irony, there's a whole bunch of ironies on that because Churchill Downs is getting special privileges for in just about every way that you can think of. Now, I've talked before about the fact that the property on which that brand new video board sits pays no real estate taxes because it's not owned by Churchill Downs, the corporation.
Right.
120 plus acres is owned by the city of Louisville, which according to state law is tax exempt. So, Churchill Downs, whatever arrangement they have with the city of Louisville, they do not have to pay any real estate tax, which means that the local government, the state government, and the local schools get no revenue whatsoever. And this has been going on since the days of the Dave Armstrong administration, which has been quite a while ago. So the second thing on this video board where Churchill Downs is getting special privileges, if because it's sitting on a government property, the government has conveniently written in exceptions to the land use regulations for Jefferson County. So the government can go ahead and do whatever, pretty much whatever it wants to do on that. And there's two examples here in town that have that those huge video boards, the other being the Kentucky State Fairgrounds, owned and operated by state government. If you or I, as private business people, wanted to put in this new video board technology like either the Kentucky Exposition Center has or Churchill Downs has, we would be precluded from doing that. It's not a question of simply going through the process. That's not it. That's not it at all. They have specific regulations on the size of signs that we can put up. There are no deviations from that. So government, in this case here, not only regulates the business activity in terms of putting up LED video signs, but they also prevent anyone from doing that which they're doing themselves. Now, this is a double standard which just never sets well with me. And the thing that one of the things
that
makes
this
particularly galling. Well, hang on here. If anybody has ever been to Columbus, Ohio, these video boards are everywhere in Columbus, Ohio, because Columbus, Ohio, the capital of Ohio, happens to have a much more friendly business environment than Louisville, Kentucky.
Well, sure. But see, that's the whole thing. And, you know, you're talking about the signs, and it's not just about the video boards. I kind of want to point out, because you pointed out a good thing a minute ago when you talked about the size of the signs and the signs that are allowed on all these buildings, et cetera, because, you know, we have real-world examples right here in Louisville. You know, we have businesses right out here in the southwest end of the county that were told they had to take banners down off of their stores. I mean, they used to have big banners for Bud Light sale, you know, and things like that. They were forced to take these things off their stores, yet the city of Louisville agrees to hang these big old monster-sized banners on the side of buildings to promote a Diane Sawyer, for example, as somebody from Louisville. You know, so there's always been this disconnect with that. I just wanted to point that out because I think it's important. You know, it's the truth. And you know, when you get into the video boards and everything else, go ahead.
And that's more insidious than what you have stated because Those banners that you're referring to, and they're scattered, there's more than 20 of them all over the metro area, those banners are funded by a private industry, number one, and they're being hung on private buildings for the most part, okay? But if you or I wanted to put a banner like that on our building, and some of these banners have been up for 5, 6, 7 years now, we would not
bad.
Be allowed
oh, yeah.
to do that. Yeah, they would not allow us to do that, all right? They would not allow us to do
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying.
Because it's a double standard again. It's a double standard. If you're in with the current crop of crooks that run government, you're in good shape.
Well, there's no doubt about it.
You can
there's
do pretty much whatever you want.
There's no doubt about it. And that's what I'm getting to because, you know, you just mentioned private business and private, you know, donors that made these signs up and put them on the sides of these privately owned buildings. That's a business. It's a corporate business. It's no different than the guy who owns a mom and pop, you know, little step and fetch food mart where you go in and grab cigarettes, Cokes, or beer. They own the building. It's a private business, a private building. Why should they not be entitled to the same rights? That's exactly it. It's always a double standard here, and it's not just here. It's like, I like that a lot of places around the country. But what's interesting to me is, though, there's just more examples of why, you know, places like Toyota want to go ahead and pull out. Steve Beshear issued a statement, and here's just part of it, and I got this from the Courier-Journal because I didn't feel like going through all the gibberish. When Toyota completes this move, you know, they're going to have about 4,000 jobs in all that are going to be affected. Most of those are from here. Steve Beshear issued a statement that said, "We are extremely disappointed by Toyota's decision. We would have welcomed the opportunity to discuss options with Toyota, but now we will turn our attention to preparing for this transition." Really downplaying the scope of this, and then talks about how Kentucky remains a powerful force in auto manufacturing, and we're going to do everything possible to maintain and strengthen Kentucky's position as one of the top states for the auto industry. I mean, for me, these were contradictory statements. Because, one, if you really welcome the opportunity to discuss any options with Toyota, why, you know, they didn't just decide to leave and keep Kentucky out of the loop. I'm sure they met with Kentucky officials, and sure they tried to get them to meet the same thing that Texas was offering them, and they refused to do it. So let's not act like, you know, Toyota left you with no choices here. And the second thing is, when you talk about Kentucky remaining a powerful force in auto manufacturing, it's not just the auto industry in Kentucky. You know, we should be a powerful force in all manufacturing in Kentucky and all jobs in Kentucky. But the reality is, with the excessive tax rates, the excessive tax base and everything else, you know, unless you pay the pig, in this case Steve Beshear and the Democratic Mafia in this state, unless you pay to play, we're going to run you out of town. And that's exactly what's going on with Toyota. What's going to happen in the next 3 years is we're going to lose the Toyota manufacturing facility and put even thousands more of people out of work. That's the problem with these idiots like Steve Beshear. And I know people get sick of me using names, and that's life. But, you know, these guys just don't get it. They get it. They just don't care. What do you think about those statements?
Well, they do care, Ed. The trouble is they don't care about the regular citizen. They care about their buddies and their friends and themselves. And that striation, I think it's illustrative of the fact that this country got away, was founded by breaking away from a king and his court arrangement, all right? We had a bunch of people that came here and said, I want to get away from this top-down approach where you have a ruler who's never wrong and a bunch of his henchmen, and we want to form this thing called a republic, and we did. And we got it set up, and it worked for, you know, a couple hundred years without a whole lot of problem. But over time, we are migrating back toward a model that we ran away from in the early days of this country. We have our social classes today are stratified so badly. We have a ruling elite, just like the king and his court from Merry Old England, who get all the perks and privileges and benefits. And then there's everybody else. What made America unique for the longest time was the existence of a strong middle class. Well, the middle class has been shrinking for some time, and now we're galloping down the road to having basically a wealthy class and an underclass, and that is it. The middle class is being squeezed from both ends. So,
well, it really is, and it's intentional. I mean, this isn't something we don't know. It's intentional. You know, so what's the end game, Paul?
Well, Ed, I think we're just going to have to let this thing play out, and when enough people get fed up enough, then we will see some pretty strong reaction and decisiveness. It's got to get bad enough, okay?
Right.
It's got to get bad. It's just like at the founding of this country, the folks that were feeling the pinch from England were not, you know, the working class folks. It was the wealthy class. They're the ones that staged the Boston Tea Party. They were getting pinched for for a one-half of 1 cent tax that they found too burdensome. And then they created a revolution over that and other government policies of the day. All right? So when they got tired of it, they said, enough's enough. And then we're just going to have to let this little soap opera play out. When the elites overplay their hand, and Ed, they're really close to overplaying their hand now. Okay.
Well, I'll
but
tell
when
you,
they finally overplay their hand, we will see a reaction from everybody else.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about that. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break, folks. Remember, you can call us at 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys on the listening queue, hit that one on your dial pad and we'll get you on there. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break, and I'm going to tell you, coming back, we're going to talk a little bit. You know, the more we think that things are changing, the more they remain the same. And we're going to look at Matt Bevin and Mitch McConnell and show you why. You're listening to the Ed Spreckster Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Spreckster of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Back, folks. Thanks so much for sticking around. Remember, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. Ed Martin is now joining us, running a little bit late. I told you guys he has a business run that Barack Obama built for him, and he made it at the bottom of the hour, so that's good. How are you, Ed?
Hey, I tell you what, hey, give me just a second. I got to actually take another call.
Here we go. All right, that's fine. That's no problem. I tell you, folks, you know, we were going into break, and we were talking about the Churchill Downs. We're talking about the double standard. We're talking about all these other things. You know, and one thing that we continue screaming about is we need better representation. We need better choices in elections. You know, and we know that the two-party system, especially here in Kentucky, and it's like that everywhere, really, the two-party system controls everything. It's the uniparty. So you try to work within that uniparty and find good candidates because that's the only choices that you have a lot of times. So the Tea Party has put all their support behind Mitch McConnell's opponent, Matt Bevin. And, you know, Matt Bevin is supposedly out there making all these things. And as we pointed out time and time again, you know, Matt Bevin is as far of a Tea Party as anybody I can think of. And I tell you, you know, so when I was mentioning before the break that as much as we really hope things change. Welcome back. Stick around. When I mentioned before the break that you know, the more things we think change, the more they're really the same, I'm talking about Matt Bevin and Mitch McConnell in that context. Great story come out, you know, but during a press conference Matt Bevin had at his Middletown headquarters, he was criticizing Mitch McConnell for telling the Beattyville Enterprise that it wasn't his job to bring jobs to Lee County. So Matt Bevin pounces on this statement and says, Mitch McConnell says it's not his job to bring jobs to, you know, to Lee County. Mitch McConnell seems to be focused on one job and one job only, and that's keeping his own job. Well, lo and behold, this is where everything stays the same. It was a great soundbite. It was a dig at Mitch. And I'm no Mitch fan. People of this show know that. All right? The fans of the show know that. But Bevin actually said later that he agrees with McConnell, that it's not the government's job to create jobs. So then he was put on the spot. He says, well, then what's the difference between your position and McConnell's position? McConnell says it's not his job to create jobs because it's not, and you're saying you agree with him the government shouldn't create jobs. So Bevin has to complicate this and go even further. You know, and Bevin goes on to say that Mitch McConnell stated that it wasn't his job to be concerned about the economic plight, that he thinks it's the role of government, and he was trying to wash his hands of it. Well, that's not true. According to the Edmund Shelby, the editor of the newspaper pointed out there, Mitch McConnell was quoted as saying, when he was asked about jobs in Lee County, he was quoted as saying, that is not my job. It's the primary responsibility of the state commerce cabinet. So he was telling the world how you create jobs. Never once did he say he wasn't concerned about the economic plight. Never once did he say that the government was responsible. He pointed out that the state commerce cabinet are the ones who have to, it's their primary responsibility to work on creating jobs. You know, and then, of course, Bevin refused any questions at all about anything else. He wouldn't talk about his time, you know, arguing about legalizing cockfighting. And he had his sister. I mean, this is the thing with this guy. He had his daughters in a commercial last week telling the whole world that Mitch McConnell's a liar, their dad's a great dad. You know, now he's got his sister going with him to all these events and trying to defend him. When he was asked about the cockfighting rally, you know, his sister stands up and says, well, I'm his sister, and he's been very good to animals all his life. I remember him rescuing a hummingbird. Yeah, okay, whatever, we get it. If you got to hide behind the skirts of women, Mr. Bevin, then you don't need to be in a man's race. Because when it comes to politics, you better have some balls. I don't care if you're female. You better have some balls. And he clearly doesn't have any. But I'm really disappointed, Ed, that this guy is supposedly the Tea Party favorite, and everybody's supposedly giving him this support because they want to get rid of Mitch. And he is proving that he's more of the same or maybe even worse. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had my questions about Bevin ever since I found out what he did for a living, you know, And a true Tea Partier would rail against the central banking, which has done huge favors for those in the equities market, which is, as I understand, where Bevin's from. But I see two sides to this. One, I think it's kind of cute. You know, we've got Mitch all of a sudden trying to act a little Rand Paul-like, you know, a little libertarian, trying to out-conservative somebody every once in a while. It's not my job, you know. Well, since we win, you know. I'll bet if we go back and look at old-school McConnell commercials, he's going to tout the fact he brought jobs to a certain locale. So, you know, I think it's good that McConnell's trying to take some kind of hard line. But by the same token, yeah, it's just, and Bevin taking things out of context, whereas McConnell's statement went on and almost correcting, you know, what he said. This is one of the problems I'm having as of late, having, you know, registered for public, is here we got two candidates going at it, and I haven't heard anything that remotely resembles a solution or an innovative thought or anything from them. It's just, it's sniping back and forth. We've got a guy who's a Liberty candidate, supposed to be pretty damn smart, you know, and a businessman and understands the finance and banking. Yet all he did is anti-McConnell rhetoric out of him. And then there's McConnell who's been there 30 years. All he can get is anti-Bevin rhetoric out of him. It's like, gosh, really? Boy, you know, I feel like Shakespeare and King Richard. My kingdom for an original thought, please.
Well, I tell you, I mean, really at this point, I mean, if Matt Bevin wins this, it's going to be a miracle. But at the same time, I mean, Matt Bevin might as well just run one commercial over and over and over and over again. It'd take about 10 seconds max. And the whole theme of the commercial is my name is Matt Bevin. It's not Mitch McConnell, because he can't talk about issues. He can't talk about his stance, because every time he goes down in the gutter and attacks Mitch McConnell on something, you know, that he wants to attack him on, which is fair game. Mitch McConnell, that's his game plan, right? Just go to the gutter. But Matt Bevin is coming up and trying to act like he has solutions and answers and things like that, and he's not putting anything out there. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, taking things out of context, it's one thing to take things out of context. It's another to make a complete fabrication. You know, we expect every candidate to take one sentence out of a paragraph and exploit the hell out of it. But in this particular case, he's saying that Mitch McConnell said it's not his job to be concerned about the economic plight, and that he thinks it's the role of government. He was trying to wash his hands of this. That isn't what he said at all. It's a complete fabrication, and that's the problem with Matt Bevin. We want somebody that's going to stand up. But Matt Bevin clearly is not the guy that can do this, and I really hate saying that, especially this late in the game. But there is no way in hell Matt Bevin will ever get any support from me. There's none. I can't see a way to do that. I'm wanting to. I really do. I think Mitch McConnell has been in office way too long. Whether you agree with his politics or not, I think when you make a career out of politics, you're doing something wrong. But I cannot, for the life of me, find a reason to vote for Matt Bevin. And I think that most everybody that supports him is not finding a reason to vote for him either. They're finding a reason to vote against Mitch McConnell. And that's not exactly the same thing, is it?
No. And that's the sorry state of politics in America today. Local, federal, state, doesn't matter. It's more about whether it's negative campaigning or it's just the fact that in fact nobody has any original ideas, nobody has any solutions that they're willing to stick their neck out on. It's something. It seems like all anybody has is, and, you know, to paraphrase it, it's like, okay, I may suck, but I don't suck as bad as the other guy. And that's pretty much what we get.
Absolutely.
You know, to me, I can't believe the party hierarchy. I mean, it's the easy route, for sure. You know, nobody has to stick their neck out. Nobody has to think outside the box. But, you know, the voters are just, no wonder we get these low voter turnouts. No way. It's going to be a sorry state of affairs when the primary rolls around. I simply can't imagine voter turnout being, I can't imagine the people that are going to vote for Mitch actually being enthusiastic about it. And by the same token, I can't believe the Bevin supporters outside of a small group that hate Mitch so much, I can't imagine he's going to turn out any voters either, because everybody's looking at him going, oh, well, great.
Well,
you know, Mitch says Bevin sucks. Bevin says Mitch sucks. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
have a nice day.
Well, I've said many times that, you know, it is, you know, when you run the political gambit and you're running for office, when you're somebody like Mitch McConnell, you want that low voter turnout. The low voter turnout typically, in most cases, favors the incumbent politician. So it's up to the guy who's taking on that incumbent to motivate people enough and believe in them enough to go to the polls. I think that this is going to be one of the lowest voter turnouts we've had. I really do. And that automatically favors Mitch McConnell, because the only people that go vote in a low voter turnout are the diehard establishment party status quo. I mean, that usually is the case. So, you know, Mitch McConnell shouldn't have any problems with this race just based on that logic alone. Because Matt Bevin, to me, and everybody I've talked to, I mean, the people that I've talked to that say they support Matt Bevin, you know, when you ask them why, they can't tell you one thing that they believe in about Matt Bevin. All they tell you is it's just time for Mitch to go. He's been there too long. It's not that they believe in Bevin, so that's tepid support, so they're not going to show up at the polls anyway. So, you know, Matt Bevin is not doing anything to inspire people, and that is the problem. He's made every mistake you can possibly make. You know, his campaign is being run by amateurs, in my opinion, because there's no way in hell anybody that knows anything about Kentucky politics would have ever run a campaign like this against somebody like Mitch McConnell. You know, and there's just been too many mistakes. I just don't see it getting any better. Not in, what, 3 or 4 weeks before the election? It's just not going to happen. You know, so it's really disturbing.
And Mitch's war chest is full. So I mean, if Mitch's people even remotely perceived it as being close, the attack that they would go on would be legendary. So, no, they're in sort of they're in a glide path. They're gearing up for Alison Wonderman Grimes.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, and rightfully so. I mean, they just don't think this is much of a race. You know, and if Matt Bevin were to win, you know, I would seriously be in a position where I really wouldn't know what to do. Because I think Alison Lundgren Grimes is completely worthless, but Matt Bevin isn't telling me anything that's believable. So I don't know, man. It's going to be a strange general election if he were to pull this off, but I think it's going to take a miracle. A couple other quick stories. Rand Paul was in West Louisville this week, you know, and he was speaking to a group, and he was talking about the minimum wage. Clearly, Rand Paul is against the minimum wage, you know, but he also went on record as supporting those people who wanted to bring a Walmart to the West End next year. You know, and that's not exactly a common thing when you get into to folks like Atticus Scott, who believes in this thing called Kentucky Jobs with Justice, which is nothing more than communism, in my opinion. But Rand Paul sits there and he says, you know, what he went on record and said was that 200 jobs, even if they pay minimum wage, are a lot better than zero jobs that pay $0. But it's an economic fact that when you raise the minimum wage, the people who are hurt the worst are minorities and kids. According to a Harvard economist, Greg Mankey, and a study that was done by the National Bureau of Economic Research, Rand Paul is right. Now, I have to admit, those are very credible sources, and when you make a statement like that, you can back it up with those sources. Why is it so hard for these clowns to understand that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't, you know, they like to rail against it like these people that Atticus Scott aligns with. As I always say, as a business owner, it's like, yeah, it's really easy to sit on the outside and say that somebody should pay more or whatever because, hey, maybe you pulled something off of Bloomberg and saw what some major corporations' profits were. But, you know, you don't identify with the smaller companies, and then they basically demonstrate that they don't understand economics. 200 jobs, maybe they pay minimum wage, but you know what those 200 jobs do? Is they employ 200 people,
right?
Which puts demand on the workforce. You know, let's just say maybe we'll call it the workforce that doesn't have felony convictions that can pass a drug test. It puts demand on it. So yeah, okay. So Walmart comes in and pays minimum wage. That means, you know, they're competing for workers, and that's the way you raise people's level of standard of living, is you compete. You compete for the workers. You bid up
exactly.
For the labor. I can remember years ago when there was 4% unemployment or whatever. We were, you know, you kind of scratch your head and say, "Crap!" You know, you simply can't hang your shingle out, say, "Now hiring," and you can't hire for minimum wage because nobody's working for it because the guy down the street's hiring for more, and you're competing for workers. So what we need to do, what people like Atticus Scott don't understand because they want it now, and they want to be the ones calling the shots, is what we need to do, and I've told union guys this and everybody, we've got to create jobs. It doesn't matter whether they're minimum wage or skilled labor or whatever, but we've got to come up with an environment, we've got to create an environment where employers compete for employees as opposed to where we are right now, where employees basically compete for the scraps because there's just not that many jobs.
Well,
once
that's
you get
it.
That,
you know,
minimum wage is a moot issue. because once employers start competing for, you know, they'll start treating their workers better, and they'll start paying their workers better. And that's just, to me, and the only way you can do that is you just got to fill the pipeline with jobs. Doesn't matter where they start, it's where they end up that matters, and Attica doesn't get that.
Well, and people like her never will. Attica doesn't know what working is. She's done nothing but run her mouth her whole life. Explain to me one thing that she's done that's been credible that could even, you know, remotely compare to somebody who's out there hustling every day and working their ass off. You know, that just doesn't work. But, you know, it's really fascinating, though, because...
Hey, she'll pose next to Che Guevara mural, and, you know, therefore she identifies with the working class. So we're all
good,
right?
Yeah, yeah. There you go, man. You might as well go to the Waxing Museum and take pictures of yourself with Clark Gable and tell the whole world you were best friends. Everybody knows I'm not old enough to do that, but I'm getting pretty old. You know, but we look at this stuff, though. I mean, and that's the whole thing. When it comes to the free market is a very, very basic principle. It's all about supply and demand. You know, so when we look at things in that perspective, we look at a baker, for example. If you're the only baker in town and you've got one loaf of bread, but you have 10 people that want to buy it, well, you're going to charge any price you want to because the market will bear that to sell that loaf of bread. But if you're the only baker in town and you've got 10 loaves of bread and one customer, well, you're going to sell that for whatever that customer is willing to pay, which is going to be a lot less in that scenario. It's the same thing in the workforce. It's supply and demand. If you have too many workers, the wages go down. If you don't have enough workers, the wages go up. It's going to be that way. But to set this mythical minimum wage is what really destroys things. Because, you know, I mean, let's face it. Rand Paul went on record and he said this, and I think he's right about this as well. There's so much of work is just showing up and doing a good job. Is it terrible if an adult has to work minimum wage and that's all they can get? Yes, it is. We'd like them to get more, but we don't get more by raising the minimum wage artificially above the market wage. We get less jobs. And that's very true. When you start looking at the big employers that everybody thinks make the big money, let's look at Ford, for example. You know, when the wages got to a point where the wages were sucking up the profits, Ford found a better way of doing business. They invested in technology. Now robots make a hell of a lot of the daggone job, make up a hell of a lot of the jobs that Ford relies on to get the work done. Where we would have 10 or 12,000 Ford employees today in one plant, we've only got 4,000 or 5,000 in one plant. So the market dictated, because of the wages, that as these wages went up, we just made less jobs available. Now we have robots doing the work of a human, and that robot can do it a hell of a lot cheaper, a hell of a lot faster, and a hell of a lot tighter on the specs. So, you know, we always find a way out, and we've talked about the hamburgers. Remember that? We were talking about McDonald's.
Oh, yeah,
they've actually
automatic hamburger machine.
Automatic. They've got that over in Europe now, testing it. So, you know, where you actually walk up, you'll make your order at a machine like an ATM. You'll pay for it there. You walk to the end of the counter, and when you get there, you will have a robot and a complete factory machine addition that is going to do everything. Fry the hamburger, cut the lettuce, cut the tomato, do everything to the order that you made. You're not going to have one human involved in the process. You're going to have two humans in the whole place. You're going to have one guy that's going to sit there and keep feeding the stock supply until they find a way to do that. And then you're going to have another guy that's going to be maintenance, and he's going to sit there to fix a robot if it breaks down so that you can get your food and we can continue this production cycle. So now, instead of having 40 employees at a McDonald's, now you're going to have two. Because minimum wage is going up, you just force 38 people out of work. And that's what the things that Attica Scott and those people that think like her do not get. You know, you can talk all this crap all you want to, but the reality is the market will adjust. And when that market adjusts, the only losers are going to be the humans who are relying on that job.
Yeah, and the thing that I always go back to is this small business. Small business is not going to make the capital investment to automate. It doesn't work. In most cases, small business is not going to make the investment or the commitment to offshore because it doesn't work. But once again, politicians, they pretty much crap on small business. And if they're not crapping on you, they're just ignoring you. And that's where the competition comes from. It's like, you know, Ford is getting away with paying pretty low wages on for their new hires, as you well know, you know, as you know personally.
Sure.
They can get away with it because, you know what? There are no small businesses out there because, you know, the last thing Ford wants to hear is some guy applying for a job that's saying, oh, well, you know, we'll open you up at whatever, 13 an hour. The last thing in the world they want to hear is just have some guy with a at least a basic skill set, look at them and go, you know, I can get that down the street at the local machine shop. I don't need, you know, I don't need to put up with your corporate crap. And Ford's going to have to raise their wages, you know. But small business is the one that don't offshore. And again, but for small business, for people like Attica Scott to and other people, to Barack Obama, to sit there and tell small business, which operates often enough on small margins, what you have to pay people, not what works, not what fits your business model, but just because they think 10-10 sounds good.
They, oh, yeah.
They're saying, hey, you got to start people at 10-10. I'll be honest. I tell people straight up. It's some of the guys that are on the floor, you know, we have very low turnover. The guys love their jobs. None of them are making, you know, they're all making pretty good money. But
right.
I look people straight in the eye when they come in for an application. And they'll say, well, if you give them a start, I look at them and I tell them what I'm going to pay them. And it's kind of low. And they look at me like, what? I'm like, yeah. I'm not going to open you up at $13 an hour and then find out you can't do this job. I said, because that's really going to hurt your feelings. And I let you go. I'm going to start you off low. And as soon as we can tell that, and, you know, granted, cut me a little slack, warehouse talk. Well, they're going to say, as soon as I can tell you, you can tell your ass from a hole in the ground about what we're doing around here, the raises will come.
Well, exactly.
But I don't want you coming in with a crappy attitude and no skill set and liking this job too much because it pays well and you're not worth it to me. So, yeah, you know, that's the way small business works. I don't want to be told that the next clown that walks in the door and barely passes the drug test and has to fill out his application with cliff notes. I think government's not telling me you have to pay this guy $10 an hour or $13 an hour or some of them say $15 an hour. You're out of your trees when it gets to that. It's not happening. I'm not even taking applications at that point. So that's what's going to happen with that crap.
Well, and I agree with you, and that's where we're headed. And, you know, that's the sad reality of the situation here in Louisville and indeed across the country. We're losing our manufacturing base because nobody wants to look at the reality of what we're supposed to be doing. One quick story, and then we're gonna do a quick closing and get out of here. It's being reported now that Leo Weekly has now got a new owner. Yep, you guessed it. John Yarmuth is now the owner of Leo Weekly again. Now, I know that they're reporting that his son, Aaron Yarmuth, is the one who purchased the Leo Weekly and put it back into the family. But let's be real here, folks. You can believe what they write, or you can use your own head here. But Yarmuth started the Leo Weekly back in 1990 with a couple of investors, back when he was conservative, railing against more taxes. Now that he's a liberal screaming, wanting more taxes, you know, my, how the mighty have fallen. But so anyway, his son supposedly has bought the Leo Weekly and is now back in the Yarmuth family. That's just John Yarmuth. For me personally, I look at this and I'm laughing because what a great way to get free publicity and not have to spend a dime for advertising or anything else, having your son own a paper that you paid for. So, you know, that's all this is about, man. You're going to see John Yarmuth mentioned about every other week in the Leo Weekly for the rest of this year once his primary is over. And he's going to get all his favorable treatment. And it's just going to be laughable. But I wanted to point that out to the people. Pay attention to what's really going on.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. Honestly, you know, like I said, and John Yarmuth and I had talked about some things. I've talked to him. He's a nice guy. But you know, back to the matter is Leo Weekly is passed off as a small business. In fact, most of it is contributors, whether it's 1099s, you know. And it's a free newspaper. And, of course, the running joke is, it's like, yeah, you know, yeah, somewhere, if it wasn't for the escort service ads and the bar ads, that paper wouldn't have made a penny.
Well, that's it. That's it, you know.
I'll admit it. I pick it up sometimes just so I can find news of the weird because some of those stories will make you laugh out loud. But as far as the opinions and stuff, who cares, you know? And years ago, it was actually a paper that you kind of had to hide from your kids because, you know, they're wanting to know, hey, Dad, what's an escort service?
Oh, I'm telling you. Well, that's going to be it for tonight.
Really, do they escort you around town? It's like, yeah, something like that.
Well, that closes the show. You know, that's about it for tonight, Ed. Any final thoughts at all?
Well, I apologize for getting a little late, but, you know, like I say, got to build that business. Final thoughts, like I say, always be cynical about your politicians. You know, we were banging on Attica Scott pretty hard tonight. She's true to what she's always said she is, but, you know, like I say, that doesn't make her an authority on it. And when it comes to things like we were talking about, like West Louisville and the kids actually taking charge and stuff, it's, you know, it gets down to community, and there's nothing more to community, nothing more community-oriented than small business. And that's always going to be one of my gripes, because that's the life I live. That's, my business is part of the community in Mount Washington. Mount Washington is, you know, they're invested in my business. We get along, and that's the way it should be. And when a politician comes up and just wants to sit there and talk about generalizations like minimum wage or generalizations like insurance, or they just want to use broad terms like economic development and job creation, you know what? They're not, as my grandfather used to say, they're not worth a boot full of cold piss, because that's not where it's at. You know, you've got to get down and dirty. You've got to get down. You've got to figure out how to make things work at the basic level. And, you know, given a little breathing room, communities and small businesses and the synergy between those can pretty much hang with anything. And it creates an environment where communities thrive. And it's just like I say, I listen to things like this minimum wage talk, and it just makes my skin crawl when I hear people who haven't created jobs sit there and try to tell us, oh, well, you need, you know, living wage, raise the minimum wage. It's like you have no idea what you're talking about. You're pulling numbers out of your ass. Some East Coast professor put these numbers up there, but they don't have any idea. You know, everything's done irrespective of profits and losses and personal investment and skill sets and everything else. So I could just rant on politicians versus business all day, but I'll stop now.
Well, maybe I'll let you have that chance next week. Bottom line, folks, I mean, it's time we started using our heads. You know, Charles Barkley said that we've been voting for Democrats for 50 years and the poor are still poor. And I agree with that. I agree with that. And that's the situation. But the reason is not necessarily because you're voting for the Democrat or necessarily because you're voting for a Republican or you're voting for an independent or anything else. The reason is we keep electing the same people. We're not doing anything to make it a better choices for us. We're not doing one thing to allow better choices. We're also not doing anything to gain accountability with the choices we've made and the people we've chosen. So, you know, when we look at that in context, the reason the poor are still poor is because we've still got elected leaders who have made a career out of doing nothing more than sitting on their butt and talking about something they don't know anything about. Do we need new blood in the Congress? You betcha. Do we need term limits in the Congress? You betcha. But unfortunately, it's going to be hard to get there. And when we look at some of the choices that are available to us now that are supposed to be new blood or new inspiration, we find out that they're really just more of the same. And that's the sad reality of politics in America. That's it for tonight, folks. We'll talk some more tomorrow night with Dale the Truth right here at 7 o'clock. And don't forget the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show Thursday at 7. And our good friend Kim Mulman with Liberty Unbridled on Sunday night. Same time, same channel. That's it for tonight, Ed. Thanks for joining us. And
all
I will
right,
see
thank you
guys. Thank you, sir. And I will see you guys tomorrow night at 7. Have a great night. Take care.